submitted. And we'll move into 58630, High Noon at Arlington versus the District Court. Mr. Terry.
Thank you, Madam Chief Justice. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Very well.
In this part of the appeal, the writ petition made by the Homeowners Association, we look at the effect of assignments which the association was able to obtain from various members of the association. The association received 194 out of 342 owners. The assignments involve at least one owner in 107 of the 114 buildings. Looking at this court's decision in the Deal case, the owner of a piece of real property is a real party in interest to bring a construction defect claim. When the 194 owners assigned their claim to the Homeowners Association, the Homeowners Association became the real party in interest, at least with respect to that particular unit. And although the law regarding assignments has in the past been unclear, in this court's ruling in the Easton case, the court made pretty clear that in the absence of some kind of anti-assignment clause, any assignment clause would be viewed liberally to transfer the rights from the assignor to the assignee. The language in the assignment in this case is very broadly worded. It says any and all. I don't think there's any question that it's a complete assignment of whatever causes of action that particular unit owner may have had against D.R. Horton or anyone else involved in the construction of the building. There are a number of claims which have been raised regarding the fact that there's no mandatory obligation to do anything or the money's going to be given back to the owners. I believe all of those issues were addressed by the United States Supreme Court in the Sprint Communications case, in which they basically said, listen, if it's an assignment, it's an assignment, we're going to let it go forward. The only additional issue that D.R. Horton raised was that it might not be in contractual privity with some of the subsequent owners who assigned their rights. I believe this court's holding in the ANSI case appropriately addressed that subsequent owners have the same rights as the additional owners with respect to the construction issue.
Counsel, in this particular matter, unlike the other one, we allegedly have a finding by the court as a 23. Why is that an error?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I was saying, unlike the previous matter before us, as we reverse, now we have allegedly a finding by the court as a 23. Why is that not an error?
Again, I hate to speak for the trial judge, but I believe that she took had difficulty with the Rule 23 analysis. When you look at the other issues, you will see that she didn't really do any kind of detailed analysis. Her conclusions are rather summary. And I think she just proceeded with the overall notion that you can sue on the building envelope and you can't sue on anything else. But the issue on the assignments really is different. It's different than the overall standing issue because when we talk about the assignments, we're not talking about acting on behalf of two or more unit owners in a representative capacity. When we talk about the assignments, now we're talking about the association standing as a real party in interest with essentially 194 claims. And the real issue, I believe, for this court on this petition is what rights does an owner in a three-unit building which is constructed, frankly, in the manner of a condominium and not in the manner of a townhouse, what rights does that owner have? If you look strictly at the CC&Rs, that owner is responsible for a third of a roof. How is a practical matter as an owner going to take care of a third of a roof, and what happens if there's problems on the other two-thirds of that roof? Similarly, if there's a problem with other components that affect the entire building, I submit that any one owner in that building should be able to bring a claim regarding that. For example, if there is a defect in how the firewalls are constructed and a fire starts in somebody else's unit, it has run the danger of that fire getting into the owner's unit much quicker than the building code would permit.
Mr. Terry,
yes.
Didn't you seek class status for the 194 claims you owned?
What we did, Your Honor, is we sought class action status on behalf of the association, and we did what would in essence be a belt and suspenders approach, and reached out to the individual owners to present their claims as individual claims.
Well, maybe I'm not communicating my question. Your association, as you point out, now owns the claims of 194 units.
Correct.
So this is really no different than if I was one of the association members and I had assigned you my claims. I would either be seeking class action status as a class representative, if I were a plaintiff, or you'd be seeking class action status for me. Is that what you are doing here?
No. With respect to the assignments, that's not what we are doing here. With respect to the assignments, we're saying that with respect to the 107 buildings in which the association owns the claims of at least one unit owner, in many cases it's two unit owners, and in some cases it's all three unit owners, to bring claims regarding that particular building. And the issue that arises, and it's easiest seen in the context of a building in which the association only owns the claims of one unit owner, what claims is that one unit owner permitted to bring in light of the fact they live in that building? Or they own that unit, and that unit's in the building.
So you are not, with respect to the 194 assigned claims, you are not seeking class action status.
Correct.
You just wanted to prosecute the claims of 194 owners in a single lawsuit.
Correct.
But you are, to some extent, aren't you? You're seeking, if it's a building that has three people in it and you have only one assigned claim, you're seeking to represent the interests of the other two non-assigned claims on behalf of that one assigned claim.
That would technically be true. There would be two ways of looking at it. One is that are you bringing the action on behalf of the other two?
Right.
And the second one would be, does that one unit owner alone, by virtue of being that one unit in the building, have the right to bring claims regarding components that affect his or her unit? And what we submitted to the trial court was that if you're in one unit in a building and there's a defect in the structural system someplace in the building, that one unit owner has a right to bring that claim.
Well, this is an interesting concept. So if you prevail, and D.R. Horton is required to pay that unit owner the money necessary to repair and the attorney's fees and costs associated with prosecuting the claims for that building, under the assignment, the association retains all proceeds. So if I'm a unit owner who did not assign my claim, apparently I have now had the defect paid for through the lawsuit, but I get no benefit. I get no money, may not even get the repair, and the association has all the money.
Well, at one level...
Is that how this works?
No, Your Honor. Let me tell you...
How am I misunderstanding this assignment?
Well, there's two things. Number one, again, I think those concerns were addressed by the Supreme Court in the Sprint Communications case. But here, the situation is even more protective, and that's because the association is not some amorphous body. It is, in fact, run by a board of directors who are elected by the members and who owe a fiduciary duty to the members to expend whatever funds they receive for the benefit of the members. So you don't have the situation where the money is going to some third party who can then take it and go on a vacation.
But the lawsuit isn't being prosecuted by the association as a result of a vote of the board or its members. The association acquired 194 claims, and it now represents me as an assignee, not me as a member of the association. It's an entirely different representative capacity.
It is true that it represents you as an assignor of that claim. However, it does not lose its status as a board of directors, and the members of the board of directors do not give up their fiduciary obligations as a result of having received that assignment.
But could I ask a question as to the, let's call them the two non-assigners in the three-person unit? Let's say you went to trial and lost representing the one assigner, and the other two people decide later they would like to relitigate those same issues individually. Where are we with that?
Well, I think that the other two owners would be bound. I don't think is there any question if there was in fact a verdict, and I think those individuals would be entitled to notice and an opportunity if they chose to try and resolve, basically get out of the litigation. However, as a practical matter, they would have to be given an opportunity to opt out. I don't think there's a question.
What's the mechanism for that, Mr. Terry? Isn't Rule 23 the only mechanism I know of that would afford notice and opt out rights? So that requires a Rule 23 analysis, doesn't it?
Well, I think the way that would be handled is that you would then add the other two unit owners in the one unit owner case as a necessary party and bring them into the case, serve them with a complaint, and allow them to appear if they chose to appear.
But that has not been done. That's correct.
That has not yet been done. That is correct.
And
they have all received notice.
Well, that's not sufficient as to what you're asserting. But let me come backwards. You talked about belt and suspenders. So we're sitting here with two separate approaches, which you've been kind of morphing together. One is the class, and the other is the individual assignment.
Correct.
And they each have to be looked at and reviewed in their separate capacity because you're kind of merging them or splurging them together.
I agree with you, Your Honor.
Which really creates some problems in terms of some of the issues Justice Pickering has raised if you're looking at the class versus the individual capacity and the right to proceed and how that affects the rights of the individuals.
I agree that they do need to be looked at analytically in a separate manner. And we attempted to do that in the trial court. Perhaps we were not as articulate as we could have been.
Any questions? Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Carlson.
Robert Carlson on behalf of D.R. Horton. I've struggled with the issues involving this for quite a while. It seems to me like it's very murky as to what really the plaintiffs are looking for. I think, as Justice Pickering pointed out, it looks like they've taken an assignment with the idea that those assignments now allow them to represent people who haven't done an assignment. So the purpose is that they've increased their ability to be a representative of other people who have not chosen, for whatever reason, to enter into this lawsuit. The trial court did an analysis in this case of Rule 23 and found that the assignments weren't, and the claims made by the assignees were not sufficient to qualify as a class action lawsuit.
Mr. Carlson, did the association's motion for declaratory relief ask, as it relates to the assignments, ask to have the case determined to be a class action?
Are you asking, did it?
Yes, sir.
I don't believe it did.
So in the absence of a request by the plaintiffs that the assigned claims be treated for class action purposes, why would the judge engage in a class action analysis as to the assigned claims?
All I can do is look at what she said, which was that she believed that this court's ruling in First Light required them. That's the part I've been struggling with, because it would appear that what the association has done by taking those assignments is put itself in a position where it now has created a joinder case of those individuals, and there's 194 assignments, and they have the rights to pursue those 194.
What's confusing to me is the court seems to have concluded that the 194 assigned claims are not capable of a class action, but nobody's made a motion asking that it be certified as a class. So our court requested that the judge or directed the judge do an analysis under 116 with respect to the association's claims under 116. I don't read that order as requiring the judge to do a class action analysis with respect to the assigned claims.
I agree.
All right. That being said, at this stage, why wouldn't the case consist of 194 individual lawsuits against you? In effect.
That's the part I've been struggling with. Our difficulty is that,
So you'd agree that in the absence of a request from the plaintiffs for class certification for the assigned claims, this case should be proceeding on the basis of the 194 assigned claims.
I would agree that if the plaintiffs had...
Wherever that leads y'all.
I'm sorry?
Wherever that leads all of you.
I would agree that if the plaintiffs had stopped at that and said, we have 194 sets of rights, and we're going to pursue that on an individual basis, that there'd be a lot less to talk about. But as they didn't stop.
Did the motion for declaratory relief include a request that one of our assigned members seeks to recover damages for two people who are not assigned members?
It actually sought a request that once they had an assignment from any individual in the building, that the association now had standing for the entire building.
All right. So to that extent, the judge could conduct whatever evaluation was appropriate on that request.
Yes. So.
But even that wasn't a request for class certification.
In my mind, there's only a couple of vehicles by which you can represent someone else. One is that the legislature says you can, and the other is that you get a direct assignment. So I was trying to, that's the part I've been struggling with, which is the individual unit owner says, you have my rights. And then the HOA says, and now we have the rights of those other guys too. And I don't think they do.
Well, because the complaint in paragraph 2 of the complaint at lines 21 through 24 reserved to the plaintiff the right to proceed either as a class action or through joinder, depending upon, I presume, what later motions would be made. So the only motion that I'm aware of that's at issue in front of the district court and this court is the motion for declaratory relief, whatever relief it sought. Is that right?
I believe that's true, Your Honor.
Okay.
The situation we're faced with is that the association seems, my impression of the generalized tenor of these motions was that they believe they have the right now to sue on behalf of all the units because they have assignments of some of the units. And we don't believe that's true. It doesn't sound like the trial court agreed with that hypothesis. So her articulation of that was through the vehicle of class certification, which I would have to agree wasn't requested by them in this instance. However, they asked for the right to proceed on behalf of individuals they don't represent through the allegation that because I have one, I have three, and I have two and I have three. And that was the part I think we disagree with, and we also disagree with the argument that because they're a fiduciary in some degrees that they're going to do the right thing.
So if they wanted to proceed on behalf of those unit owners who hadn't assigned, the proper motion would have been a motion for joinder or a motion for class action certification.
Those are the only two vehicles by which I'm aware that they could get the rights to the other units.
And neither one of those requests are embodied. Maybe class action impliedly is embodied in the motion for declaratory relief, but none of those are explicitly requested in the motion for declaratory relief.
I would agree with the court's analysis on that. Our difficulty is that this really highlights the issue that Justice Pickering talked about, is if the middle unit loses, are the other two units bound? And plaintiff's counsel indicates, yes, they are, and I'm kind of struggling with that because if I have to face a trial court and say, well, they were never in the lawsuit, they never got notice of the lawsuit, they never served the lawsuit, yet they can't sue me anymore, I think I'm losing that about 60, 70, 80% of the time because they're going to say these people did not have due process. They did not have an opportunity to litigate it. Mm-hmm. Although the association may be in a situation where they're close, maybe in privity, maybe with the same equal rights or willingness to litigate the claim, I don't think that the individual unit should be precluded. And that's our difficulty with this whole overlapping standing issue.
Mr. Carlson, how would you address that issue? Let's say hypothetically there were 194 complaints filed by the homeowners, and the judge granted a Rule 42 motion to consolidate all of them into one trial. I think Justice Douglas experienced in district court. I don't know if it's like something like that. How would it affect this claim preclusion issue with these people that aren't part of that? Is it the same struggle you have here, or would it be more easy to address that?
I think if there was such a lawsuit and the order was issued, that there would be, as Mr. Cherry pointed out, an obligation to make those people necessary parties and drag them in the lawsuit so that all the issues can be adjudicated at once and we can be protected. But that doesn't mean that the HOA has standing to do that. What it means is that we're going to have to bring in a lot of people who have, at least through inaction, expressed a reluctance to join into the litigation. Mm-hmm. And they are going to either be not represented, or they're going to have to retain counsel, or they're going to be in an interesting situation where the HOA, which doesn't have their rights, has some obligation to defend their rights, all of which seems to be a morass of taking away individual rights who would have a basic right to be left alone. And now they're being dragged into litigation because the HOA chooses to overextend. So it's a very difficult situation. It's not one that I can come up with a glib or straightforward response.
Well, the assignment to the assigned claims isn't a representative analysis.
I agree.
They assign the claims. They now own the claims. If I'm a unit owner and I assign the claim, they're me. They're suing for my claims.
Don't disagree with the court. I think that's the proper analysis. Whether the assignments will hold up under any kind of scrutiny that we may be allowed to bring is certainly an issue not before the court now. But the issue that we are faced with is what happens to the rest of the units? Can this be adjudicated in a manner that is efficient and protects the rights of all involved? And that's what we're hoping for, is some clarity on the issue. I thank you.
You still have time.
Yeah, I didn't ask for any time. I think that the, and our position is, that this court set out in First Light a vehicle by which all parties could be protected, all parties would have notice, all parties would have an opportunity, if their rights are going to be affected, to withdraw, opt out, or opt in to the lawsuit. The Homeowners Association appears either not capable of obtaining that kind of certification or unwilling to do so. As a result of that, these other vehicles are being attempted. The argument about building envelope and now the assignment argument. Well, if there's an assignment, they have an assignment. They have a right to bring individual lawsuits, and the commonality of proof that goes with a class action isn't available to them. They're going to have to either demonstrate that these individual defects occur in each individual home so that they can demonstrate it, or through substantial foundation of evidence, extrapolate between some units they look at and some units they don't. But it's an individualized claim. And if the individuals don't prevail, either because the evidence wasn't presented or because they don't have the defect, then we're going to be the prevailing party, and the other two owners in that unit, that building, are going to face either issue or claim preclusion.
Well, is extrapolation evidence a viable evidentiary approach where 195 individual lawsuits are being presented?
My personal opinion is extrapolation evidence is hardly viable in these type of constructions because of the fact that they're so individualized in their nature and their hand-built buildings. So I would have to respond no, but I can foresee, given the right circumstances, that it's possible that an adequate foundation could be laid that would allow the trial court to rationally allow evidence in on an extrapolation basis. However, I don't think that damages can ever be extrapolated. Perhaps defective construction, maybe. And I say about damages because I think damages have to be observed. So my answer is, I guess, yes and no to the justice's inquiry. Lastly, I think that the issue that this court is faced with is that it appears that the trial court was able to do a Rule 23 analysis for the assignments. The assignments, as I think Justice Hardesty has pointed out, seem to be viable, at least not attacked in that manner at this stage. However, it doesn't allow them to then be a class representative or to have the rights of individuals who haven't assigned their rights. This does not confer any greater rights upon the HOA than the rights that are assigned by the individual homeowner. As a result of that, I think that they're asking for the right to bring a lawsuit on behalf of the other unit owners was properly decided in the trial court, which is that they don't have those rights. I agree with the court that there was no class action requested by the Homeowners Association, and I think that although the trial court did the analysis, she says, pursuant to first lights requirements, that it may not be necessary in a situation where there's an actual assignment. But they do not have any rights greater than what the assignment confers upon. They don't have the right to common evidence. They don't have the right to bring actions on behalf of others who haven't given their rights to the Homeowners Association.
So Ms., you would concede that the writ should be granted insofar as it seeks an order by the district, seeks to overturn the order by the district court that the assigned claims are not subject to class action analysis because that relief wasn't sought.
I would have to agree that that would be the proper resolution of that because the assignments are limited in nature. They do not go to what the association asks for, which is the rights of other people. And limited in that fashion, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Mr. Terry.
I would like to just clarify one point, and that is that to the extent that a unit owner owns a particular unit in a building, and because of other components which are not necessarily directly within the confines of that unit owner's property affect that unit owner, the unit owner ought to have the right to bring those claims. So, as an example, when we talk about electrical issues or plumbing issues within the unit, the owner should be able to bring those claims with respect to his or her own unit. I don't think that's subject to much dispute. The question is, what happens when, for example, a portion of the roof starts to cause problems in the owner's unit, but the portion of the roof is not directly above where that unit owner is? Seems to me the unit owner, because their property will be affected by another component in the building, they ought to have a right to bring a claim regarding that other component. And I think the kinds of issues that are particularly clear are structural components, the construction of the firewalls, the construction of the roof. Those issues will potentially affect the unit owner, and they should have a right. Now,
but counsel, aren't there, as we got into a little earlier, other vehicles, other ways to do that by bringing in indispensable parties and so on, that we don't have the trappings for that in this particular case at this time?
Well, Justice, you are correct, and in fact that issue was raised in the Sprint Communications case, and they point out that by motion a court or a party could insist that the other parties be brought into the case with respect to those particular issues. And certainly we would not oppose such a request in order to purchase the uncertainty.
But let's go back to, I guess, the threshold that Justice Hardesty hit upon, and that is this was not really a request for 23 certification.
That is correct.
That it should have been viewed as the assignments under 116 and going forward.
That is correct. And that is why we're only asking for the right to bring a claim regarding components throughout the building that affect the owner who assigned their claims. To the extent there are components in the other units that don't affect the owner who assigned his or her claim, we are not requesting that those issues be in the litigation.
Thank you.
Only those components in the building which affect the unit owner. And there may need to be additional procedural protections. I realize that on the basis of the discussion, and we certainly be willing to consider that and probably be appropriate for the trial court to insist upon something like that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cherry. This case will stand submitted. We will take a very short recess while the court reconstitutes itself, and we'll return for the...